we shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Welcome to the Security Perimeter Podcast, an island of insanity, starring my dad, Athanasios Christoulos. This is an amazing podcast, really the best. You're gonna love this, guaranteed, 100%. We are gonna make podcasting great again, promise. And now, my dad, Athanasios, aka Saki Christoulos.
So, this is part 3 of the myth-busting World War II podcast series. Part 3 of the series on the Nazis being great strategists, which they obviously weren't. They sucked at what they did. And this particular episode looks at basically focuses on the Russian front and kind of tries to demonstrate how stupid the Nazis, not the Wehrmacht, so to speak, not the German army, how the Nazis, Hitler and his buddies were in terms of, you know, planning and executing the operation. So I hope you enjoy it. This is part 3. I think there's going to be I'm sure there's going to be a part 4. There may actually even be a part 5 to the series, because, you know, the stupidity of the Nazis could just go on and on and on and on and on, and I figure I'm going to have to stop it at some point. But no, I think it'll go up to part 5, and then we'll do another myth-busting thing, which I'll keep a surprise for now. Feedback is always appreciated. This has been a really fun series. This whole myth-busting thing has been really, really fun. In fact, it's been extremely popular. I didn't think it was gonna have such an impact. But thank you for downloading these episodes. It's nice to see that there's an interest, and people are enjoying. Without further ado, on to part 3 of myth-busting. Myth-busting. On to part 3 of myth-busting, the Nazis as great strategists. So enjoy and comment. Without further ado, episode 3 of whatever. No, sorry. Yeah, 3, right. So the next campaign that I want to discuss is the North African campaign that went from June 1940 until more or less May of 1943. It starts with right after the Italians declare war on the Western Allies. Great Britain from Egypt attacks the Italians in Libya. Well, again, to make a long story short, it doesn't go so good for the Italians. They're getting their butts seriously kicked. I know you're all just so surprised out there. How is that possible? Mussolini calls his good old buddy Adolf Hitler, A.H., as he would call him, and B.M., you know, that would, yeah, I know this for a fact that when Mussolini would call up Hitler, he would call him, "Hey, how's it going, H? I'm doing good, BM." BM calls up AH, and oh my god, I just realized that I have the same initials as Adolf Hitler. Holy crap, I gotta change my name. Calls him up and says, "I need some help, bro." And Hitler sends his arguably best general, Erwin Rommel, to help out the Italians in North Africa. subsequent to that, you have a series of kind of back and forth between the British and the Germans. Nothing really decisive. It was a battle of a lot of movement. It's very large terrain, so you really couldn't have enough equipment and soldiers to have like these kinds of stalemate type World War One situations. It was a very, very fluid battle. Territory that was won, you know, 1 week was lost the next week. But that's how the North African campaign went. Here's a mistake that Hitler made. Like, why the hell is he sending troops to Germany, sending his best general to Germany? Why the, or and tanks to Germany to try to help Mussolini win a war in a part of the world that Hitler really doesn't give a shit about? North Africa was never part of any of Hitler's military campaigns, military objectives. In fact, he had essentially told Mussolini, you deal with it. The Mediterranean was already, let's say, an allied or British lake, so the argument can't be that the reason why Hitler sent troops to North Africa was because of a fear of Britain controlling the Mediterranean. So really, the logic of getting involved in the North African campaign, honestly, if I was AH, the other AH, I would have told BM, just, you know, go screw yourself, buddy. I'm planning another war, right? Hitler is planning another war, a war that is part of his long-term strategic objectives, the war against the Russians, Operation Barbarossa. So what the heck is he doing sending troops and tanks to Germany, sending on top of that, very good troops, very well-trained troops, you know, those first-generation troops that fought in the beginning of the Second World War on the side of Germany were very, very well-trained, sending very well-trained, very well-equipped troops to fight Mussolini's war. Inevitably, that's going to affect, to some extent, the war in Russia. That combined, let's say, with the Balkan campaign, I mean, those two things, the Balkan campaign that we talked about in the last episode and the North African campaign, are called, you know, the Balkan and North African distraction. And they're called the distraction because that's essentially what they were. Remember, Hitler was planning to invade, was planning to implement Operation Barbarossa around the 15th of May. Doesn't do it until 22nd of June. Besides that, they have a significant amount of materiel and men in the Balkans, and that stuff has to be, you know, moved back and prepared for an invasion of Russia, you know, the implementation of Operation Barbarossa. So, serious mistake on the part of the Nazis. So much for this, you know, brilliant military strategy on the part of the Nazis. I've read in some history texts that Rommel's forces were gutted by Hitler in order to prepare for the war against Russia, and that's the reason why Rommel didn't win, because he just simply didn't have enough equipment to do the job. I'm not so sure about that, because if you look at the losses that the Nazis, the Axis powers, took in North Africa, they're absolutely staggering. Why did the Allies win in North Africa? Well, because they were pretty good at learning. Look, you have Montgomery in Egypt area, more or less. And then what the Allies plan for is an amphibious landing on the eastern side, I'm sorry, on the western side of North Africa. And that landing, which was a joint British-American landing, took place in November of 1942. So the idea there was that what they were going to do was they were going to kind of pincer Rommel's forces, in other words, come at the Germans, or AKA the swastikas, from both sides. That attacks from coming from the east, mainly from American forces, and attacks coming from the west, mainly from British forces. And it's funny, the Americans, little side comment here, the Americans, when they landed, they didn't want to be mistaken for British, because the French and the British weren't getting along too well, and of course there was, like, you know, this like 1,000-year history between the two of them, so they didn't know what the French forces, which, by the way, of course, are Vichy forces, technically. They didn't know what they would do. Would they shoot? Would they surrender? Three main landing areas in Western North Africa. In some instances, the Vichy French fought. In other instances, they didn't. Eventually, of course, the Americans, with the help of the British, were able to overwhelm the resistance. Some of the resistance, actually, the resistance by the Vichy forces. Some of those Vichy forces eventually came to fight on the same side as the Americans and the British in the war in North Africa. But getting back to the funny anecdote, the Americans were taught taught a phrase in French that they were like supposed to be screaming the whole time while they were landing, which was "Ne tirez pas, ne tirez." And I'm faking like an American accent because I can speak French pretty decently, and I wouldn't have an accent normally, so I'm speaking as an American now. "Ne tirez pas, ne tirez pas. Nous sommes Américains, nous sommes Américains." For those of you who don't know what that means, it means please don't shoot, please don't shoot. We're Americans, and the idea there was that the French would be more reluctant to shoot at Americans than they would at British. Now, the Americans coming from the west, moving eastward towards the Germans, it wasn't that easy. I mean, first of all, they had to cross huge desert to get to the Germans, but also when they actually did meet up with German resistance, it didn't go so well for them, especially the first time that they had a major engagement. The Americans got their butts kicked. It was it's called the Battle of Kesselring Pass. But the noteworthy thing to highlight as far as the Americans are concerned is that they learned from this experience. By the way, it was Patton's first modern combat experience, let's say. But the thing that I want to highlight is that the Americans learned from their mistakes and adjusted their strategies, their combat tactics, and it made a difference. Other countries, armies, the Germans really wouldn't learn from their mistakes. In fact, they would just keep on repeating the same mistakes. And this is something that's pretty consistent about Hitler, is that he just could not possibly learn from combat experiences, from failed missions, from failed campaigns, and adjust based on that information. But the Americans were really good at learning, and in the end, it made a significant difference. Getting back to the issue of losses in North Africa, this useless campaign as far as the Germans are concerned. The Allies lost about, I'm looking at the numbers here, about 52,000 killed, and the Axis powers lost about the same, 45,000 killed, so they're kind of tied on that one. But what stands out is that 200,000 Germans were captured. 200,000 well-trained, young, first generation, meaning, those troops that were there from the beginning of the war that were extremely well-trained. 200,000 that were captured that could have been used in other theaters of operation. Specifically, I'm thinking of the Russian front. In terms of material losses, this is pretty significant as well. The Allies lost about 2,000 tanks and 1,500 aircraft. But listen to the numbers on as far as the Axis powers are concerned. And I know these numbers include the Italians, and I tried to find only the German losses specifically, but I couldn't. So about 2,500 tanks, 70,000 trucks, 6,000 artillery pieces, 8,000 aircraft, and 2.5 million gross tons of shipping. The Germans, the Axis and the Germans had specifically had been using, they were trying to ship equipment through the Mediterranean, big mistake, from, let's say, Italy and other Axis powers to North Africa in order to keep the Axis power supplied. And the British were sinking these boats, these supply boats, left and right. 2.5 million tons of shipping lost. Now, again, that's full of equipment that could have been used in another front. So you take the two distractions, the Balkan distraction and the North African distraction together. I mean, I know that most historians think that it didn't make a difference. It's kind of hard to see how it couldn't have made a difference in the war in Russia, especially after the war had already started. The Germans are now fighting a war in Russia, and they're fighting a war in North Africa. And, you know, they have to decide which one is going to get the supplies and get the best, you know, guys to do the fighting. I would imagine it would be just so infuriating and distracting, especially if you know that you're getting your butt kicked in North Africa, and you're soon going to start getting your butt kicked in Russia as well. So I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence on this, because when we start talking about Operation Barbarossa, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that the Nazis did. Not the German, you know, not the Wehrmacht, not the army. There's a whole bunch of other orders that were given by the Nazis, Hitler, AH, that really created a mess for the Germans in the Russian front. So it's hard to kind of say, was it the Balkan, the distraction in the Balkans, and obvious distraction in North Africa, or was it crappy, insane decision, Nazi decision making once the war in Russia already began, which we will now turn to. So why did Germany fight a pointless war in North Africa where there was absolutely no strategic interest at stake other than, you know, Mussolini losing, with the result being the capture of 200,000 of Germany's best troops that could have been used for the really important aims that Hitler had, which was basically Russia. Why did they do this? You guessed it. Nazis and Hitler. Okay, so now we get to the big fuck-up. The big fuck-up being the invasion of the Soviet Union. Now remember, the original attack was supposed to take place around more or less 15 May. So the actual attack takes place June 22nd, 1941. The German army was essentially organized into three different armies, I guess. One was Army, I think they're called Army Group North, which was going to head towards the Baltic and Leningrad. There was Army Group South, which was going to head towards the Caucasus and all those rich oil fields down there, and Army Group Center, which was the most powerful of the three forces, was going to head towards Moscow. Moscow, of course, being the objective on the 22nd of June of 1941. In other words, this is what the German High Command and the Nazis, Hitler, and the rest of his idiots had agreed that should be the main objective, is to capture Moscow. Before getting into the details of like what actually happened, let me give you some numbers, just because this was the biggest, I guess it must be the biggest land battle in the history of mankind. The Germans, along with their Axis allies, threw about 4 million personnel, something like 4,000 tanks, 5,000 aircraft, around 20,000 artillery pieces up against the Russians, who were looking back with about 3 million soldiers, about 11,000 tanks, and about more or less 10,000 aircraft. In the beginning of the campaign went exceedingly well for the Germans. They took the Russians by surprise, which is surprising given the fact that they had been amassing troops up against the border with the Soviet Union for a couple of years now. But Stalin just couldn't get past the idea that there's no way that Hitler would attack. Psychologists refer to this as cognitive closure, unwilling to listen to other people who are actually telling them, look, dude, they're going to invade. Churchill had told Stalin, they're going to invade. The British had intelligence within Germany, and it was pretty clear that the Germans were going to invade, but Stalin just didn't take it seriously, and therefore he was taken completely by surprise. So with the initial attack, which was exceedingly successful, the Germans were able to completely destroy Soviet organizational command and control. Essentially, they paralyzed command from the actual units on the ground, platoons, companies, battalions, from higher commands back in Moscow. And by the end of the first week, the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, had achieved air supremacy over the combat areas. They essentially destroyed pretty much every single Soviet aircraft, whether in the air or on the ground. In fact, they hit most of them on the ground before they could actually even take off. However, within about a month of the campaign, the Germans came to the realization that they had pretty much used up all of their supplies, and that the Red Army was actually not in such bad shape as they were, let's say, 4 weeks earlier. They were able to bring in reinforcements, they were able to bring in provisions, and the Germans were suffering from a lack of supply. So it's at this point that Hitler decides to change the strategy. And instead of going for Moscow, which, as I said before, had been the main objective, Hitler feared that Army Group Center had advanced way too far into Russia, into the Soviet Union, compared to, let's say, Army Group North and Army Group South. So you had this salient, you had this Army Group Center was like jutting into like a bulge in the middle of the Soviet Union. So it's at this point, which is around August actually, and this salient, this bulge, is just outside of a place, a city called Smolensk, and it's about 400 kilometers from Moscow. So we're not really talking about a distance that's exceptionally large. Hitler decides to change strategy. He fears the supply issue excessively. So what he does, he decides that, okay, so we're not going to like go after the capital anymore. What we're going to do is we're going to fight an economic war with the Russians. What we're going to do is we're going to take their oil fields, we're going to take their productive capacity, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. I know, to me, that sounds like the Germans are, or at least Hitler, sorry. Got to correct myself. The Hitler, was kind of preparing himself for like a war of attrition, which obviously Germany couldn't possibly fight, as we know, from the experience of World War I. And he decides to, I guess, split Army Group Center into two, like half of it goes north to sort of fill in that salient that existed on the northern side, and the other half goes south to fill in that salient that had been created in the southern side, sort of like trying to make a more or less straight front line. And this, remember, this is August, right? I mean, we're a month after the invasion has taken place. The Germans, the Nazis, are about 400 kilometers from Moscow, and they decide to change. And Hitler decides to change strategy to fight an economic war. The German chiefs of staff, especially the commander of the Army Group Center, and all of the other Germans involved, to be honest with you, in the entire Operation Barbarossa, argued vehemently in favor of continuing towards Moscow. They argued that the psychological importance of capturing the Soviet capital was going to be huge. The other thing is that the generals also pointed out that Moscow was a major center of arms production. And because Moscow was sort of like in the middle, geographically in the middle, but also politically in the middle and everything in the middle, like everything would have to go through Moscow. By capturing Moscow, you'd essentially rupture the communication network that the Russians had. So there were, let's say, real, you know, military reasons to continue with the original operation, and there were also psychological reasons. And it's actually quite impressive how much resistance was created to Hitler's plan to Hitler's decision to change the plan and not go for Moscow anymore. Diet Coke break. By the time they're ready to take Moscow, now you've kind of slowed things down, right? To do all those other things that Hitler wanted to do, now August has now become October. And finally in October, October of 1941, the Germans decide to go after Moscow. Well, by October, the weather has gotten pretty shitty. And it's not that it's cold, it's that it's rain. Rain has hit the roads in and out of Moscow and the area around Moscow, and as you know, you can probably imagine, most of these roads turned into mud. The tracked vehicles, like the tanks, simply couldn't operate under those conditions. So the problem, unlike what a lot of people think was the problem, which was like the winter screwed the Germans, it wasn't exactly the winter that screwed the Germans, it was the fall that screwed the Germans. After those tracked vehicles couldn't move anymore, the Germans essentially had to halt their advance, waiting until the late fall to launch the attack, instead of in August when they were quite close and the generals wanted the attack on Moscow to take place, gave the Russians a chance to reorganize, fortify. But not only that, there were a lot of troops that were way out on the Pacific side, Manchuria, etc. They were there just in case the Japanese were going to attack. And then around October, I think it was, of 1941, Stalin got some juicy bit of intelligence that the focus of the Japanese assault would not be the Soviet Union, would rather be focused on the United States. So he decided to move many of those troops that were out there and move them to Moscow for the coming battle with the Germans. So some significant advantages that developed for the Russians as a result of this delay on the part of the Germans. They had to halt their advance, and then the plan became to wait out the winter. And a lot of these German soldiers weren't exactly equipped to survive a Russian winter. Well, you know, if you think about it then, just to finish this first part of the Soviet Union / Nazi German war, imagine if the Nazis had gone ahead in August, right? with the plan. And Hitler hadn't changed the plan. In all likelihood, the Germans would have captured Moscow late August, early September. And essentially, the war in the East could have been over as early as September of 1941, if not for Hitler's stupidity, if not for the Nazis being stupid and incompetent. So there you go. But do you know what the biggest screw-up that was made by the Nazis? Emphasize the Nazis, meaning Hitler. After the United States is attacked by Japan on 7 December at Pearl Harbor, the Nazis, Hitler, declares war on the United States. So let's sit and think about this for a second, all right? You're getting your ass kicked in front of Moscow. The winter's getting bad. Your troops are undersupplied, or they have inadequate clothing for the winter. They're actually like stealing clothes from the Russians, dead Russians, to wear in the freezing December winter outside of Moscow. Things really don't look so good for you at that particular moment. Why would you declare war on the United States? And all you're doing is guaranteeing that the United States is going to fight you in Europe. I mean, you know who's celebrating? There's one person that's celebrating. Churchill. Churchill knows he's won the war. Churchill knows that now that the Americans are gonna go there, that's it. It's over for Nazi Germany. That probably stands as the stupidest decision made by any strategist in the history of mankind. But yeah, the U.S. is going to come in and they're going to do some serious butt-kicking. There was just no way Nazi Germany could sustain a war with yet another major power. So, I mean, you're at war with Great Britain, right? You're losing. Things haven't gone well in Operation Barbarossa. In other words, Operation Barbarossa has, for all intents and purposes, failed. Maybe you're in a decent position, geographically speaking, in terms of how far you have penetrated into Russia. But, you know, things don't look so great. So what do you decide to do? I'm just going to go to war against another great power. Because, like, I don't have enough great powers to fight. Bad call. Now, some historians have argued Hitler declares war on the United States because he wants to, the legal justification in order to continue unrestricted submarine warfare in the Atlantic. I don't really buy that at all for a couple of reasons. Number one, the last thing that I think of when I think of Adolf Hitler is international law. And the second thing is that you pretty much had unrestricted warfare on the part of the submarines going on already. The Germans were attacking neutral third countries in that battle, which included a number of ships from Latin America as well. So going back to that hypothesis that the Balkan distraction and the North African distraction caused the Germans to lose the war, you got to take into account the dumbass decision that dumbass Hitler makes in August to not attack Moscow and to make another further dumbass decision that he's going to play a game of attrition with the Soviets. So, you know, those 6 weeks, we're talking about 6 weeks or so, more or less. I mean, May 15 to June 12. I'm sorry, we're talking about more like 5 weeks. Probably irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, because the Germans would have been in that situation irrespective of whether it was August or June or July or whenever the attack actually took place. And Hitler would have probably made the same stupid mistake to halt the advance on Moscow. So right after this, Hitler has a little bit of attention deficit disorder. He can't decide what he wants to go after. Is he going to go after Leningrad? Is he going to go after Moscow? Is he going to have to go after the Caucasus in the south? And he's like changing his mind practically on a daily basis, which really bodes well for, you know, awesome Nazi strategy here. But or the next major fuck up on the part of the Germans is the battle for Stalingrad, which we'll turn to right now. The Germans are actually in pretty decent shape, in spite of the fact that, you know, they got their ass kicked in front of Moscow. Decent shape if you look at the map of the world. I mean, they control Ukraine, Belarus, the Baltic republics. Geographically, things look pretty good. So what are they going to do next? That's the, you know, big question. So Hitler decides, well, let's see. I don't know. Maybe he picked up a three-sided coin. Ooh, that would be cool. And flipped it and decided, okay, we're going after the south. We're going towards Stalingrad. Stalingrad was, now it's called, I think it's called Volgograd now. I don't think they would have kept the name Stalingrad. That would be could be called Putingrad in a few years or something like that. It's in the south. It's in the Caucasus, where the oil is and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there is a strategic reason for going after Stalingrad. That's why initially there were three army groups, one north, one center, one south. But now they're going to put their attention on Stalingrad. The idea being that if they capture Stalingrad and the Volga River, they'll be able to, or disrupt commercial river traffic that was necessary for the Russians. And Hitler really had it in for Stalingrad, because he, to quote him, he said that after Stalingrad's capture, its male citizens are to be killed and all women and children are to be deported, because its population is thoroughly communistic and especially dangerous. Thoroughly communistic and especially dangerous. The campaign begins in the spring of 1942. I don't want to go into too much detail, but to make a long story short, we're kind of like in the same situation that we were in front of Moscow a few months earlier, or 1 year earlier. It's starting to get cold. It's starting, the winter's starting to kick in. They haven't captured Stalingrad as quickly as they anticipated. The Russians are putting up a ferocious defense of the city. And after a few months of slow advance, the Germans had finally actually reached the river banks and had captured 90% of the city. The German military focus had been on the push on the part of its forces towards the city. And you do have this jutting out situation once again. But the flanks of the German army in Stalingrad, the 6th Army under Paulus, was being defended by Italians, Hungarians, Romanians. Let's just say that the Germans decided that they were going to use Germans to go after the city, and that they were going to keep the Italians, Hungarians, Romanians, and the rest of their allies back, because, well, you know, let's, you know, we got to admit the Italians didn't really have a particularly good record. And, well, you know, Romanians are Romanians. Russians decided to attack the flanks on each side. they had left the river bank. The Germans had left the banks around the city unguarded, so the Russians were able to cross over the river to the other side, where you had those Italian, Hungarian, and Romanian forces quite easily. And what they did was essentially encircled, or started to encircle, the Sixth Army, an entire army. And it's at that point that the commander of the Sixth Army, General Paulus, starts to send messages back to Germany, saying that, you know, we gotta move out, or else we're gonna be encircled, and then we're seriously screwed. And Hitler didn't let him retreat. This is where you got Hitler's, like, you know, his famous thing, which was to the last man, not one inch will be given up. Every German soldier has a responsibility to die in the field, defending every single inch that they've managed to capture from the Russians. Paulus, of course, being smarter, a lot smarter than Hitler, but that doesn't really say much, said, I gotta get my ass out of here. Hitler didn't let them. Hitler comes up with a plan where he's gonna try to, Hitler decides that the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, is going to try to maintain the supply of the Sixth Army inside this slowly closing pocket. The Sixth Army needed about 700 tons of material every single day. On average, the Germans weren't able to put anything more than about 80, 85 tons of supplies. So the winter's coming, they're starving. Paul is screaming, let me get the hell out of here. Hitler won't let him get out of there. Things are looking really, really bad. Well, eventually the Paulus' army becomes completely encircled, and Paulus starts sending, feelers to Germany, to Hitler, about the possibility of surrendering, which, of course, as I just mentioned a couple of seconds ago, that's not in Hitler's book, and forbids Paulus from surrendering. In fact, what he does is he makes Paulus a field marshal. The implication of that being that no German field marshal had ever surrendered. The preference was, and Hitler actually wanted this. I mean, he actually preferred that the Germans and the Hungarians and the Italians and the Romanians that were stuck in this pocket in the winter of 1948, he preferred that they would just shoot themselves rather than surrender or retreat. So he makes him a field marshal, and literally the next day, Paulus surrenders. And this was, a big serious deal. This was the first time something like this had ever happened. The German field marshal surrenders an entire army to the Russians, of all people. Devastating defeat on the part of the Germans here. And, you know, let's face it, the reason for this was because Hitler wouldn't allow Paulus to do an orderly retreat, which would have saved the Sixth Army and not left this, essentially left the south of Russia, or the south of the Soviet Union, rather, open to a rapid Soviet reconquest of the region. So yeah, this was a pretty big deal. I mean, Stalingrad, not only was Hitler such a dumbass for not letting them retreat earlier, but Stalingrad also, a lot of guys surrendered, but it was a brutal campaign. Considered it's the largest confrontation of the Second World War. It was fierce. To this day, stands as the largest and bloodiest battle in the history of warfare. About 2 million men were killed in this campaign. Now, if you look at the numbers, even taking into account the fact that the Germans, Paulus, surrendered, the Russians still actually lost more men than the Germans. You know, the number of Russian killed in the Battle of Stalingrad is close to 2 million men, women and children. On the part of Germany, 300,000 to 400,000 casualties. The Italians lost about 100,000 men. The Romanians between 100,000 and 150,000. The Hungarians between 100,000 and 150,000. Don't get me wrong; these numbers aren't all dead. They include the captured Germans as well. The number of Germans that were actually captured by the Soviet forces was about 250,000 to 300,000, including general and or marshal Paulus. And here's a really sickening number: from that 250,000 to 300,000 prisoners of war, that German, Romanian, Hungarian prisoners of war that were captured by the Soviets, only about 5% made it back home at the end of the war. Interestingly enough, Paulus, General Paulus, joined the what was called the Free German League, which was essentially Germans, high-ranking Germans, many of them who had been captured by in combat in the Eastern Front, who had been turned, let's say, and who were now being used as propaganda against Hitler by the NKVD or the Soviet secret service, the one that existed before the KGB. Paulus lived out the rest of his life in Eastern Europe. He was actually a witness at Nuremberg. He wasn't charged himself with anything. I don't think he was, and if he was, it certainly wasn't a particularly serious charge. But he was a witness at Nuremberg, and he lived out the rest of his life peacefully, doing some farming in East Germany, what used to be called East Germany. So, getting back to that campaign, this was brutal. But, you know, the Russians almost have like this endless supply of men to recover from this, whereas the Germans are slowly getting their butts kicked and losing these troops that are considered the best troops. So, essentially, Germany is not going to recover from Stalingrad. I mean, they'll be able to, you know, put numbers back on the field. They'll be able to, you know, field another million soldiers quite easily. But what they're doing now, the Germans are starting to, let's say, be a little bit flexible in who they're drafting into the armed forces of the country. So Stalingrad was a turning point. It was, many consider it, the beginning of the end, let's say, of Nazi Germany. And once again, the reason why this took place was because Hitler was such an idiot, and he wouldn't allow Paulus to retreat in an orderly manner and save the Sixth Army when there was still time. So that's Stalingrad. Shitty strategy. Losing war, not because the other side is better, because they're stupid. The Germany lost the war because the Nazis were just such bad freaking strategists. If Hitler hadn't had that policy of like no retreat to the last man, you're expected to, you know, put a bullet in your head before you surrender. You know, who knows? Things could have been different. There's this other thing that I want to mention that I forgot to mention before, and I should have mentioned it before. So like we're in the beginning of 1943, and it's been a couple of years since, you know, vast swaths of Soviet territory is occupied. And what the Nazis are doing in the captured territories to the population is unspeakable. This is being done, of course, by the SS, you know, the guys in the black uniform that actually didn't really do any fighting at all. They would just go around murdering and raping children, women, old men, things, that kind of stuff. You had something also called the Waffen-SS, which were the part of the SS that did fighting, that actually, you know, were combat soldiers. But the SS, you know, in just general, was just a bunch of lunatics who were implementing Hitler's racial policies behind the line. And this was creating enormous problems for the Wehrmacht, the German army, in the front, because those Russians who were fighting the Germans knew what would happen if they were captured by the Germans. They would be tortured, murdered, raped, whatever you can think of, by the SS. And it, you know, you didn't need Stalin pushing his communist propaganda, anti-fascist propaganda, to these soldiers. These soldiers knew what was going on. These Russian soldiers knew what was going on behind the front line. And that just made them much more willing to fight to the death, let's say. And an extremely large number of German generals, beginning with Guderian, complained incessantly to Hitler about the treatment of civilians behind the front line. So this is a Nazi policy. These racial policies are Nazi policies. And these policies, the effect that they're having is that they're making it even more difficult for the Wehrmacht to fight the war. From what I understand, and this is in reference to the starving German soldiers in the winter of 1941 and also in the winter of 1942 in Stalingrad, Hitler had begun to prioritize moving Jews to concentration camps rather than supplying his regular army in the Eastern Front. In other words, Hitler preferred to kill Jews than to feed and clothe his own soldiers on the front line with the Russians. Now, if that isn't a gift to the Russians and to the Western allies eventually, I mean, I can't think of what else you can do to make it easier for the German army to be defeated. So like I said, after Stalingrad, the Germans are in full retreat. And this is when you get one of Hitler's other obsessions, other than, you know, killing innocent civilians and counterattack. Hitler was all about the counterattack. No retreat. Counterattack. So you get a German counterattack in the middle of this, you know, full-blown retreat, which came to be called the Battle of Kursk, which is the biggest tank battle in the history of mankind. I'm running out of time for this episode, so I guess we're going to have a part 4 for this series, maybe even a part 5. So yeah, so stay tuned for the next episode of Dumbass Nazis with the help of the little corporal and basically screwing up their chances of winning the Second World War because of the little corporal, i.e. Hitler, for those who don't know what the German Wehrmacht would refer to him behind his back, actually, the little corporal. Next time we'll look at basically the collapse of the German army in the Eastern Front, as well as some of the stupid mistakes that the Nazis made during and after the D-Day invasion. So stay tuned for episode 4 and possibly 5 of Myth-Busting World War II, Nazis the Great Strategists? I think not. À la prochaine. I don't regret a single
to say.